The power play from Gretzky's continues here. Scott Laughlin alongside Bill Berg. We're now joined by the TV play-by-play voice of the Nashville Predators, Pete Weber. How you doing, Pete?
I'm doing great. Nice to talk with you. Now, this is almost bi-coastal. Back in the central part of the country.
It really is. And, you know, Bergie and I were just reminiscing about memories as a kid at Maple Leaf Gardens. And mm-hmm. Bergie was saying that he was fortunate enough to have tickets and to be in attendance the night that Daryl Sittler had the 6 goals and 4 assists against Dave Reese and the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, Reese was not the fortunate one.
No, he wasn't. I was telling Bergie, though, and I've told the listeners this before, when I was 9 years old, my dad worked at CCM, had a connection that was going to connect me with my idol, Börje Salming. 9 years old, I had an opportunity to go into the Leafs dressing room after a game to meet Börje Salming, and being a shy kid that I was, Pete, I wimped out. I missed out on the opportunity. Had the opportunity when the All-Star game was here years later to interview Salming in that very same Leafs dressing room. Didn't seem to have the same feeling as it would have when I was a kid. But think back to when you were just a young buck. And was there one moment that stood out to you in terms of a hockey memory that you were at a game or had an opportunity to meet one of your idols?
Yes. I was already, if you will, having turned pro. I was with Bob Miller and the LA Kings. It was just after the WHA merger. And Gordie Howe agreed to a singular sit-down interview with me. And that was one of those moments. And that's after I was already jaded as a professional.
I tell you what, I mean, the heart had to be beating 100 miles a minute at that point.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely was. And an interesting thing was Gordie did everything he could to put me at ease, and then his son Mark did that as well. So we had a great time together.
Oh, super. They were with Hartford then.
At that time, right. And here's a story for you from that time. J.P. Kelly, you might recall from the New Westminster Bruins, he was with the Kings in his early days there as a pro, and he didn't realize, he didn't care who he was going to check, he's going to check him. And when he checked Gordie, he didn't know that he was right next to the penalty box. So Gordie goes head first into the penalty box. I don't care if he was 51 years of age at that time. To protect J.P. Kelly, all 6'3", 235 pounds of him, Bob Berry did not play him another shift that night.
Wow. Wow. That's how much respect Gordie had, even in his early 50s.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I mean, Terry Ruskowski's often told us that story about how he was with Gordie in the WHA in practice, and he was dipsy-doodling during practice,
mm-hmm.
putting the puck through Gordie's skates and horsing around on the ice.
Yeah, not a good idea.
Yeah, next time he came back down the ice, Gordie gave him an elbow right in the kisser, and he said, listen, kid, don't ever embarrass me like that again.
Yeah.
And that was in practice. And Terry Ruskowski, Roscoe says that that's something that's stuck with him for many, many years, that's for sure.
I've heard the same sort of thing just from Terry Crisp in the early years of the Blues and doing such a thing with Glenn Hall.
Yeah.
And then Glenn Hall, every time Terry came in during practice, simply skated out of the net.
Certain guys you didn't want to mess with, that's for sure. Hey, Pete, let's talk about Game 3 coming up tomorrow night. Bridgestone Arena will be rocking. Nashville gets the split they were looking for, and we thought that they would come out with a much stronger effort in Game number 2. That's exactly what they did, Pete.
Precisely what they did, yes. I don't know if it was reading and believing clippings after getting through the first playoff round with Anaheim and doing that for the first time in franchise history or what, but the bottom line was Barry Trotz, nor were any of the players, happy with the efforts that they put forth in game number 1 of this series of Vancouver. That changed greatly in game number 2. One thing that didn't change, though, was the caliber of goaltending on both ends of the ice. I mean, that was just... I believe that there was a tweet out there that if this series were to go 7 games, the winner would have 4 goals and the loser would have 3. Well, that's the way it's played out so far through the first 2. Though we had just an explosion of goals Saturday for a total of 3.
Pete, Scotty talked about on Hockey Night in Canada, they were speaking about the lack of physical play on Shea Weber and Ryan Suter. Do you expect that Vancouver will be a lot more physical with those two?
I'm sure they'll try. I mean, what do you have to lose? These two horses played over 42 minutes in the 95-minute game on Saturday, and I would think they certainly would try that, absolutely. You know, Shea and Ryan were doing a pretty good job of that at their end of the ice, so do whatever you can. We know this is the playoffs. You do whatever is necessary.
Well, and, you know, I talked with you, Pete, about the fact that I picked Nashville to beat Anaheim just based upon the Pekka Rinne factor to begin with, and that's one of the reasons why I took Nashville to win this series in seven, was that Rinne was going to be the best player in the series, and you could make the case in the first two games that he has been.
Yeah, easily make that case. And that Roberto Luongo, though, was not exactly a distant cousin to him in terms of his performance in the first two games, but there were at least three occasions in the first overtime period Saturday night as we loomed towards Sunday morning that it looked like the game was over in Vancouver's favor, but Pekka came up with those huge saves. And one of those in particular, a sprawling, flopping, Dominic Hasek-style save that he was able to make on Henrik Sedin right to the side of the net. And that was one that I will never leave my mind. Never, ever.
Pete, talk about Shea Weber a little bit, too. You've obviously seen this guy grow up in the Nashville organization.
Yeah.
But where he's come from to where he is now, nominated for the Norris Trophy.
Came in and still is a very modest sort. But he also, we have seen over the years, that he has that mean streak that's necessary to succeed. I'll never forget a couple of years ago, Red Wings in town, and Andreas Lilja clotheslined Shea. And Andreas Lilja didn't realize what he was about to face. As a matter of fact, he didn't play for a number of months after that fight that he had with Shea Weber. So the edge is evident. The respect that he gets is evident. He gets a lot of room. And so that sort of word travels through the NHL dressing rooms very, very quickly. He has begun to assert himself. And I should say beyond begun, but he is in the early stages of his career doing exactly that.
We talked before the series began as well, Pete, about line matchups and things like that. Mm-hmm. When you look at Shea Weber and Ryan Suter being on the ice as much as they are, and I would think even more so perhaps with the last change going to Barry Trotz at Bridgestone Arena
right.
against the Sedins are taking a lot of heat right now. Not only in the first two games of this series have they not done much, but as we know in the last four games of the Chicago series, they didn't do much either. What in particular will Barry and what has Barry done in terms of trying to take away the Sedin twins?
Well, you know, he's always gone into series with concepts like that, as he did the Anaheim series, concerned about the Getzlaf line. But as that series played on, it got to the point that he put Suter and Weber out very frequently against the Koivu, Solani, and Blake line because they were the most effective offensive weapons for Anaheim. I believe we've begun to see a little bit of a swing of that strategy toward the Ryan Kessler line for Vancouver. So and maybe until the Sedin line begins to produce, they might stick with that.
What has Mike Fisher brought to the team, Pete?
Well, number one, depth up the middle. When the team very sorely needed it. He joins the club roughly at the time Marcel Gotch had to leave for the balance of the year. Requiring shoulder surgery. He also jumped into the middle of a combination that had been playing very, very well and didn't slow it down at all. So he, with Sergei Kostitsyn and with Patrick Hornqvist, earlier when he first got here, it was Marty Erat. Marty Erat subsequently has moved up with David Legwand and with Joel Ward on what has been an outstanding two-way line. And then Patrick Hornqvist went into that right-wing spot that Erat had played and has played off and on with Marty Erat having missed a couple of games in the playoffs so far this year. But he brought them offense. He gave them an offensive spark in game number one at Anaheim. And I think that had a great deal to do with giving the club some confidence heading onward. I mean, you know, you head in the playoffs, and to say that the Predators were offensively challenged during the regular season might be even kind to say that. I mean, they were tied for 21st in goals for per game during the regular year. And for some reason, the matchup with Anaheim, regular season and in the playoffs, seemed to regularly produce four goals for Nashville. That helped them out a great deal. Now, this series, it seems like two goals is an absolute bonanza. So we'll have to see how they adapt to this particular set of circumstances.
We want to mention a couple of reports have indicated that Chris Pronger is not expected to play tonight in game number two against Boston. So once again, Chris Pronger not in the lineup, according to numerous reports circulating now against the Boston Bruins. So whatever he's battling, perhaps he still is battling that issue. We know he's got the bad hand to begin with. I don't know if it's a
return. Yeah, what, his first game he played like 4.5 minutes, right?
Yeah, 4:33 in that return against Buffalo, of course, all on the power play, then played more, of course, in game number 7, and has played a little bit here. So it looks like he's not playing tonight, Pronger, for Philadelphia. Hey, Pete, lastly, I just want to ask you, we've seen the video of the Predators upon returning from B.C.
Yes.
At Music City, USA there, and the fans that were there to greet them. Give us a sense of what that atmosphere was like.
Absolutely unexpected and just tremendous. 200 to 300 fans decide to show up, and this was not something that was arranged weeks ago. I talked with the guy who arranged it at the rink this morning from the Section 303 or Selbrock 303 website. They only started putting that together at 11 o'clock yesterday morning, roughly the time that the group was taking off from Vancouver. So that was very, very, it was heartwarming, number one. And to see more TV cameras, I think, than I have seen at a presidential, you know, a presidential campaign on the trail like that was absolutely fantastic. The guys really, really enjoyed it.
It is going to be fun to watch, and Predators fans have waited a long, long time for second-round playoff action. It's just about upon them. Hey, Pete, thanks very much for doing this. We always appreciate your time.
Very happy to do it. Scott, you and Bill, have a great evening and enjoy. We only get to enjoy one game tonight, guys.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We get back at it with a couple tomorrow night, and then, of course, many coming up on Wednesday. All the best. Pete Weber,
thanks,
the TV.
Thank you, guys.
Voice of the Nashville Predators joining us, and